And that's one that we draw in a lot of people from our community and a lot of other congregations. And it's very important. And so if you are involved in it, let me express appreciation. And also, if you have not gotten involved or you haven't signed up yet, ladies, go ahead and do that and plan on being here this Friday night and bring some other ladies with you. Last week we studied, and we've been studying about Paul and his concern for these brethren at Galatia and how he is very concerned and troubled that they are leaving the truth of the gospel and have been influenced by these false teachers. And there's always a close relationship between the preacher and the congregation, or at least there should be. But there's especially a close relationship between the preacher and those whom he converts. When you think about a missionary, and you think about a missionary going to a place in our world today that there is not a congregation, and that missionary planting a congregation through sharing the gospel with them, and spending time there, and you think about the relationships that develop, and the heart he has, and then that missionary has to leave and maybe go somewhere else and doing some work, or maybe he has to return to the States. And then he hears that that church is being influenced by false teachers. His great concern, his great anxiety, and that can even happen with an elder or with a preacher here in the States, and his love and concern for a congregation. Because we're supposed to love the church. And of course, a good preacher, as Paul is certainly one of those and is a great apostle, he loves the church and he loves the congregation. And we see that through all of his letters, how much he has a deep affection for the members. And certainly, a preacher of the gospel should love the Lord's church. But Paul at this time was worried about their faith. We ended last week's lesson with this, what is really kind of a troubling verse. Paul says, "I'm afraid I may have labored over you in vain." I didn't mention it last week, but I remember Jim Fawn one time saying, he was asked, "Do you ever think about quitting preaching?" And he said, "Oh, only every Sunday night." There's a certain amount of truth to that for those who have preached, and it can be discouraging at times. And sometimes you need that rest of the week to get ready for the next Sunday. Paul says, "I labored in vain, I'm fearing that what I did might be in vain, that you might have left the truth, and that all the work I put in may be in vain." And thus Paul has made, in chapter 1 and 2, he has made a very historical argument about his past and where he got his gospel. And then in chapter 3, he makes a very theological argument about how the gospel is a gospel of faith. And he talks about Abraham and about how we're all heirs of Abraham and sons of God through faith and our baptism. So he makes a historical argument. He makes a theological argument. And now here in chapter 4, he turns to what I would call a personal argument. In other words, if the history didn't get you and you understood that you're leaving the truth, and if the theology did not get you, Paul then appeals with his heart. And I can see Paul writing this with like tears in his eyes. "I'm afraid that my labor's in vain." And so he makes a very personal appeal. And I want to note four lessons from this, or four points from this, and then we're going to make some questions ask some questions for us as application and lessons. So first of all, verse 12, Paul says, "I want you to identify with me. Brothers, I entreat you." This term "entreat" is a strong term. "I beg you, I desire, become as I am, for I also have become as you are." It seems that what Paul is doing, though we may not be totally for certain what Paul is saying, most commentators think that what Paul is saying here is he's urging them, who are these Gentiles, to become as he has become. Someone who is free from the law. You see, Paul was a Jew who used to be bound by the law, but now he has become free from the law, and now these Gentiles are wanting to be bound by the law, and they're allowing these Judaizing teachers to want to bind them upon the law. And what Paul's saying is, become as I am. Be free from the law, because I have become as you are. And what that means is, Paul's saying, I have become as a Gentile. I have become free from the law. So Paul's saying that I want you to realize that if anybody should go back to the old law and want to bind the law, as a meritorious act of works that by which we're saved. It should be me because I'm a Jew. But Paul says, I have it. I'm free from it. So become as I am, because I become like you, a Gentile. Now go to Philippians chapter 3, where Paul makes this same argument. And Philippians 3 is a long discourse. But if you look at that chapter, Paul is dealing with the same type of false teachers, what we call Judaizing teachers, who are wanting to bind the old law. And in verse 2, he calls these men dogs who want to mutilate the flesh. That is, they are binding circumcision and wanting to mutilate that because it's not a proper use of circumcision. And Paul says, verse 4, though I myself have reason for confidence in the flesh, if anyone else thinks he has reason for confidence in the flesh, I have more. And then in verses 5 and following, he lists off the reason he has, a human fleshly reason to have confidence in the flesh. Paul's saying, basically, he is of the pride of Israel. He was born an Israelite. He was circumcised the eighth day. The people of Israel, the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews. He was a Pharisee. He was zealous. He was even a persecutor of the church. And when it comes to the law, he was blameless. But notice what Paul says, and you know this statement. It's a famous statement. Whatever gain I had, I counted it all as loss for the sake of Christ. Indeed, I counted everything as loss or as rubbish or as trash because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord. For this sake I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish in order that I might gain Christ and be found in Him. Paul is saying, that's what I want you to do. Don't base your hope on your fleshly outward circumstances and even all the works you've done. Base your hope upon the faith you have in Jesus. One other reference would be chapter 3, verse 17 of this chapter, as well as 1 Corinthians 11:1. But let's look at chapter 3, verse 17 while we're there. Brothers, join in imitating me and keep your eyes on those who walk according to the example you have in us. And of course, in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 1, Paul says, imitate me as I imitate Christ. The King James says, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. You know, this brings forth a good question. Are we willing to offer our example? And we'll talk more about that in the application section. But Paul is saying, brethren, I love you. Identify with me. I have not asked you to do anything that I have not been willing to do. I have given up my family heritage. I've given up all this secular and religious esteem in Judaism. And Paul certainly had that in his training, in his recognition before he came to Christ. I've given that up because of faith in Jesus. And he's asking them to do the same. And so he offers himself as an example. He says, identify with me. But number two, he talks about their past acceptance. And this is really where it gets interesting. And this is where we get into the questions that we can't fully answer. But he says, you know, it was because of a bodily ailment that I preached the gospel to you at first. And though my condition was a trial to you, you did not scorn or despise me, but received me as a messenger of God, an angel of God, as Christ Jesus. You treated me as Jesus. What then has become of your blessedness? Why have you not still been blessing me? You used to accept me. For I testify to you that if possible, you would have even gouged out your eyes. Pretty graphic illustration and given them to me. We don't know the details here of Paul's reference. Commentators, you know, offer various suggestions. When he was traveling on his missionary journey and went to these churches of Galatia, it seems that what Paul is saying is that it was not his intentions to stop at these churches, that he was planning on passing on through and going to some other churches, or going to other cities and establishing churches, but because of a bodily ailment, because of some sickness, he had to stay or was delayed in his trip and was caught, we might say, at these locations. And so he planted the church there. Now, what is this bodily ailment? Some suggest that there was maybe some type of malaria epidemic or some type of a virus or something that was going through that area that caused him to be to be delayed and have to stay in that area for a while and be sick. Others point to the point about the illustration about the eyes. You would have gouged out your eyes. And he says that my condition was a trial to you, but you did not scorn or despise me. Some commentators suggest that maybe this talks about the repulsive appearance of Paul. That maybe Paul was not very appealing to look at. That his physical face and his eyes in some way were grotesque. And it was maybe a temporary thing, or maybe it was more of a permanent thing. Of course, we often go to 2 Corinthians 12 in trying to describe what's going on here. When Paul talks about, in that context, what we famously know as his thorn in the flesh. And he says, this thorn in the flesh was given to me as a messenger of Satan to harass me, verse 7, and to keep me from becoming conceited. And three times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Some think, because of this reference here in Galatians, that this thorn in the flesh that Paul talks about in 2 Corinthians was some type of eye affliction. In one of others, Paul's letter, he talks about, I wrote with a large hand, so maybe Paul had to have some kind of, you know, condition where he could not see well. Some other commentators will connect this back with his Damascus Road experience, where he sees such a bright light and is blinded. And of course, we know that Ananias heals him from that blinding, but maybe there was some kind of a residual effect, we might say, that followed Paul because of that episode. All those things are purely conjecture. We do not know. What we do know is that Paul was sick. He had some kind of physical ailment. He had some kind of physical disability or handicap that caused him to have to stay in Galatia. This allowed him to preach the gospel there. And here's maybe the more important point. The brethren at Galatia accepted and loved him in his disability. In fact, it says that his condition was a trial to them. In other words, it was kind of a test. Are you really going to love me despite his handicapped nature? Despite that he maybe was a burden upon them. And it says they received him as an angel. And understand the word angel can mean messenger as well. It's just, that's what it's talking about. Someone who is a messenger of God. And that's what Paul's saying. They received him as Jesus Christ. Remember, Jesus would talk in Matthew 25 about those who are in prison when you visit them. Those who are afflicted when you care for them. And when those who are naked, you give them clothes. That you've done it as unto him. These brethren at Galatia, when they took care of Paul, they did it as if it was Jesus. That was the kind of love they had for Paul. And Paul says they would have even gouged out their eyes. And that's a great statement. I don't know. It's according to your physical condition. But I have often thought about how I would have been a handicapped, very destitute, poor person, probably begging if I would have lived 500 or 600 years ago. Maybe even 200 or 300 years ago. Because I have very poor eyesight. And I have been able since I was 10 or 12 years old, to have the advantages of technology, to have glasses and contacts. I know many of you have had surgery and things like that. But have you ever thought about if you lived before these technological advances with glasses and contacts and surgeries, how handicapped you would be if you had to live your whole life with your normal vision? It could be that Paul is talking about some, I'm not saying he had awful vision, but it could be that he had some handicap like that. And Paul says, and maybe it was in the eyes, and what Paul says is they would have exchanged eyes with him because of their love. Next, notice, and Paul turns this right on them, to turn and talk about their present rejection. You see the appeal? Paul says, man, you loved me. You cared for me. And now he turns and says, so why are you now turning your back on me. The people who would have plucked out their own eyes are now the ones who are rejecting me. Have I then become your enemy by telling you the truth? Very famous statement. Paul's saying, just because I do not agree with what you're doing, just because I have spoken boldly to you and called out your sinful practices in turning to a different gospel, are you now treating me as an enemy? They make much of you, but for no good purpose. He's talking about these false teachers. Notice one thing here I think that is interesting to point out as well. Paul does not say their past behavior was insincere. Sometimes when someone really loves us and cares for us, and then later on they turn their back on us, it's almost like we feel like their past behavior was insincere and they never really loved us. It may be the case, but oftentimes it's just the case that they've been influenced, maybe by someone else, they've been persuaded by someone else, or they have changed. It doesn't mean their past love was insincere. Paul seems to believe that their love was sincere before, but now they are offended, and now they have been influenced by these false teachers. He says they want to shut you out. That is, they want to preclude them from the gospel and from the apostles and make their own little, we might say, clique with them, that you may make much of them. In other words, these false teachers are only interested in their selfish gain. The false teachers are wanting to influence them for what they stand to gain. Paul says it's always good to be made of for a good purpose. In other words, someone making over you and doing things for you is good if it's for a good purpose. But if it's just for their own advantage, then it's not good. And Paul says, not only when I am present with you. In other words, I wish I could be present with you and help you to see their deception. Turn to Romans chapter 16. Romans 16, 17 through 18. Because these false teachers remind us of these brethren in Rome who were being influenced by false teachers. He says, I appeal to you, brothers, to watch out for those who cause divisions and create obstacles contrary to the doctrine that you have been taught. Avoid them, for such persons do not serve our Lord Jesus. Now listen to the rest of the verse. But they're serving their own appetites. And by smooth talk and flattery, they deceive the hearts of the naive. You know, in our world today, we need to keep on guard. This is a good principle, especially in religious things, but also through other things. We often need to ask ourselves, why is that person wanting me to do this so much? What are they standing to gain from me choosing this? You know, it's sad, but it seems that oftentimes in our world, especially in a commercial way, people always have a motive for selling something. They have a motive for wanting to get you to do something. And sometimes you need to step back and ask, all right, what's their motive? And it may be for a good thing, and it may be sincere, but we need to ask ourselves, what's the motive involved? And here these false teachers were wanting to influence them so that they could gain. And of course, that's been done a lot in religious things, and lots of scams and lots of televangelists and others have been exposed for their hypocrisy. But we need to think about that. What is their motive involved? And what are they trying to gain? What are they trying to gain? Paul says, I'm upset about their present rejection. But then finally, before we talk about the application, Paul's determined love. You know, sometimes a relationship will challenge you, and sometimes when someone treats you as an enemy, someone turns their back on you, and they're upset, it's easy just to give up on the relationship, just to quit on it. But Paul says, my little children, for whom I am again in the anguish of childbirth. Paul, kind of an odd analogy here, because Paul's a man, obviously, and Paul takes on a feminine illustration when he talks about childbirth. And certainly Paul did not fully know what that's like, but that's kind of a biblical, it's used in the Old Testament some, and it's kind of this idea of the struggle. It takes 9 months for a mom to get a baby here. It takes the 9 months of dealing with the pregnancy and all the pains and aches and challenges that go with that. But then it ends, of course, without a lot of description here, it ends with another great challenge, right? Of delivering that child. I would can only imagine. I'm thankful that I did not have to go through that. Man, I went through it 4 times. But think about the agony of childbirth. Well, the point Paul's making here is that he is in that same kind of long, enduring process of struggling with these Galatian brethren. And he says, I want to bring about a birth in you. And right now it's very rough, but I'm working to bring about a birth of Christ in you until Christ is formed. He says, I wish I could be present with you now. I wish that I could be there and I could change my tone. I wish I didn't have to be so aggressive with these words. For I am perplexed about you. He's confused. He's confused. He's not losing hope in them. He's determined. He's keeping faith in them. But you know, love is complex. Relationships are sometimes complex. They're not always simple. It had been simple. They loved him. Then they're turning their back on him. And Paul says, I want you to know I'm not going anywhere. You may be treating me as an enemy, but you're my children. And I love you. And I'm going to persevere with you. Let's talk about some application from these things. I have 6 questions that come from this text for our lives. 6 questions that come from this text for our lives. Number one, and this one's the only one we've talked about, but I think it's worthy to repeat. Is our example worthy? And I think that's always a good question to ask. But whether we are bold enough to say, as Paul said, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ, we always need to recognize that other people are following our example. And people are going to identify with us whether we want them to identify with us or not. And we got to always ask ourselves, and this is why we got to always be concerned about the reputation we have, the name we have. And we've got to make sure that our example is worthy. And Paul says, identify with me as I'm identifying with you. Number two, and I think this is one that we've seen a lot of changes in our culture over the last 50 years. And I think that this is a good scripture to talk about with our young people, to talk about with the church and with our own families. And that is that we must have a love and an accepting attitude, a loving and accepting attitude toward those with physical infirmities. You know, in our culture today, though there's a lot of talk going on about bullying and things like that, the Christians and our young people should be leading the way on those issues, of standing against those things. And in the church, we should understand that we're made up of a diverse group of people, and that we're going to have people with all kinds of challenges, and people in our body are going to go through ups and downs, and maybe go through, as Paul went through, a physical ailment. And maybe there's going to be those who come, and we've had this at Seven Oaks before, and we've responded well. I think about some who've come and have ridden our buses and things. And how do we respond to people who come into our midst who are different than us, who maybe have some physical ailment or some mental disability or some physical handicap? You know, we don't need to just have the codes. Obviously, in building this building, we wanted to make sure we were up to code and have this building handicap accessible and things like that. But more than our building, are we as a church handicap accessible? Are our young people, do they treat others at school and on the playgrounds and at play? Do we treat them with love and acceptance? And I think this is a message and a good scripture to teach that we need to have that kind of attitude toward physical infirmities. And number three, consider the motives. That's not really a good question. Should be. We should, or are you considering the motives of those who are influencing you? Are you considering the motives of those who are influencing you? In other words, Paul is saying, you've been taken away by these people who are only wanting to take advantage of you. There are some basic things that we can illustrate this from all the emails we get of people that are just trying to take advantage. But it seems like our local news and the local newspapers and the sheriff's department, they're always putting out some scam, all right? And those are the blatant good illustrations. But there are cases as well where friends, family members, sometimes we have to draw lines and say, I'm going to draw a boundary here because you're influencing me in a harmful way and you're abusing me in this relationship. And it can even be a child sometimes who's now an adult child who may be taking advantage of a relationship. And sometimes we need to draw some lines. And we need to draw those lines by first considering the motives of those who are influencing you. Paul says these false teachers have their own bellies, their own motives in mind. They're not interested in you. And number four, are we offended at the truth? Man, that can be a tough one. I mean, we can preach Galatians 4 here, and we can talk about how these Galatians should have been able to just accept this truth and not be upset with Paul. But when the gospel steps on our own toes, when we're reading the scriptures or the sermon or the Bible class is on a particularly sensitive subject in our own lives, how do we handle that? Are we offended at the truth? And are we willing to change based upon the truth? Number five, do we use negative events to do the Lord's work? It's a good question. And I'm giving you these questions to kind of stir your thought, because this is what this text is trying to do, is bring out these thoughts in our own lives. But Paul said that it was because of physical ailment that he was kind of stuck there, and it wasn't his plan necessarily. Now, think about where your life may be sometime. You may have some kind of physical problem, some kind of setback. Maybe it's a financial setback or a job setback or even a family setback. And those things are not desired. But when those bad things happen, do you allow your place in life to still be used for the Lord's glory? It might be being able to pray more. It might be being found in a situation where you have unique people around you that you can influence and new people that you can influence. It might be opening up and looking for new doors that are opened up because of this bad event. But Paul says that even when this negative event happened, he was able to still be preaching the gospel. And that these churches were born out of a physical ailment that Paul had. Because he was there, he preached the gospel. I think of in Philippians where Paul talks about he was in prison. So what did Paul do? He preached to the Roman soldiers. It's like wherever Paul was, then he had a opportunity to try to reach out to whoever was there. And then finally, and I think this is a good question for us as, at Seven Oaks and all of us as Christians. Do we have a determination to stay with struggling Christians? You know, we must understand that everybody, certainly we're not the judges, but when we look at people's lives and we think about church attendance, or we think about maturity, we think about the volunteering for the church and working with the church, and we see people and we just, if we really look at their lives, it can be discouraging. And we think, man, when they became a Christian, they were so on fire, but now they just are not around as much as they should be, or they're not doing as much as they used to do. Don't give up on those people. Pray for those people. Encourage those people. Paul was saying in verse 11, I thought I labored in vain, but then he goes on and he talks about how, you know, it's like a childbirth. It's like it's a struggle, and we might even compare it to raising a child. It's going to be a struggle. And he says, I'm in labor over this. And so rather than giving up, we need to double our efforts in trying to encourage and reach and help those people reach their potential. And so these are some good things that I think for us to think about from this text. If you're here this evening and you're not a child of God, certainly this is a great opportunity to put Christ on in baptism, as we talked about this morning. If you need to rededicate your life, if your life is not where you need to be, I want you to know that we love you and that we want to encourage you. And if we can help you in any way, come as together we stand and sing.
To Jesus.